The recent flap over Ann Coulter's remarks about the 9/11 widows has many people worrying whether the national political conversation has gotten coarser and meaner than ever before. Not by historical standards, says our linguist Jeff Nunberg. What's new is that politics has become just another kind of reality TV.
Is American public discourse more virulent and partisan than ever before? It might seem so. But in fact, the political rhetoric of earlier days was laced with a venom and outright mendacity that could go elbow to elbow with anything you're liable to see in the modern media. It's the setting that's gotten a whole lot weirder. Americans have always enjoyed the spectacle of political brouhahas. But before the advent of talk radio and Fox News, nobody realized that you could build an entire business model by turning political vilification into a form of popular entertainment. Take Ann Coulter's recent description of the 9/11 widows as witches who were enjoying their husbands' deaths. As defamation goes, that's no more over the top than the things people were saying in the 1864 election, when the Democrats were calling Lincoln a leering buffoon and Horace Greeley was accusing the Democrats of stealing the votes of dead Union soldiers. But it's only in the current age that remarks like those could turn someone into a media celebrity who is invited to appear on Jay Leno and the Today Show to repeat her choicest charges for the delectation of the public. In a way, it's just another sign of the modern triumph of tone over substance. You wouldn't call Coulter a political thinker, no more than you'd call Simon Cowell an arts critic. But like Cowell, Coulter has an unerring sense of television as performance art. It isn't just a gift for making outrageous remarks. Plenty of people do that without being invited onto the Today Show. And in fact, Coulter doesn't get a lot of national attention for her run-of-the-mill ruminations about giving rat poison to Justice Stevens or fragging John Murtha. What made the remark about the 9/11 widows irresistible was its flamboyantly gratuitous tastelessness and the obvious pleasure Coulter took in the effect it had. People have different takes on what Coulter does, of course, beginning with deciding on what to call it. Her defenders like to describe her as a satirist or an ironist, with the implication that her liberal critics don't get the joke. But satire and irony seem pretty far from the mark here. The point of satire is to depict things as grotesque in order to make them seem ridiculous, the way Stephen Colbert does in his Bill O'Reilly persona, or Christopher Buckley does with the pointed caricatures of Thank You for Smoking. But Coulter isn't actually sending anybody up, not herself, certainly, and not the targets of her remarks. Coulter's fans may take pleasure in hearing her talk about poisoning Justice Stevens or saying that it's a pity Timothy McVeigh didn't park his truck next to the New York Times building. But that's not because those remarks made either Stevens or the New York Times seem particularly ridiculous. It's because Coulter seems to be able to get away with unbridled aggression by disguising it as mere mischief-making. If you had to come up with a name for this rhetorical maneuver, the closest you could come would be smut. In the strict sense, of course, smut is the sort of leering innuendo that veils sexual aggression. But in a broader sense, you could think of smut as any kind of nastiness that pretends to be mere naughtiness. It might be a sexual vulgarity, a racial epithet, or simply a venomous insult. What makes it smut is that it's tricked out as humor, so that if anybody claims to be offended, you can answer indignantly, "Touchy, can't you take a joke?" In that broad sense, smut can be innocuous on occasion. In fact, it's a staple of sitcoms in what you could think of as the woo moment. That's the moment when a character who's comically malicious or outspoken makes a remark that's just offensive or risque enough to test the limits of taste, and the studio audience reacts by saying, "Woo." The political talk shows traffic in these moments, too. That shouldn't be surprising, since most of these shows owe a lot to the classic sitcom. In fact, when you think of the most successful practitioners of the genre, like Coulter, O'Reilly, or James Carville, there isn't a one of them who couldn't be the model for a recurring character on Cheers or Drew Carey, the waspish termagant, the bombastic blowhard, the sly yokel. And as on the sitcoms, the drama here is character-driven rather than plot-driven. Watching O'Reilly or Hannity and Combs, you can't help recalling the bickering on All in the Family, where politics was always just a pretext for the clash of personalities. Whatever the issue the shows are talking about, the massacre at Haditha or an increase in wild bachelorette parties, it's going to be grist for the eternal Archie versus Meathead squabble between left and right. "Who are these parents who allow their kids to sleep with Michael Jackson?" Alan Combs asked a couple of years back, and Sean Hannity answered, "Liberals." It's the formulaic comic framework of these shows that makes political smut possible. However offensive a remark might sound in the abstract, it's all in the spirit of entertainment. And as Coulter and other masters of the genre understand, the effect is to aggravate the insult, not alleviate it. You not only get to offer an offense, but to charge people with prim humorlessness when they take umbrage. That's the great rhetorical achievement of our age. Other ages may have been better at mere abuse, but no one can touch us when it comes to driving people up a wall.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist who teaches at the School of Information at the University of California at Berkeley. His new book about politics and language is called Talking Right.